Sunday Surefire Podcast. I'm your host, the Commish. Joining me today is the co-host, Aaron Downtown Brown.
Hey.
And the other co-host, Ethan Weaver.
Commish, how we doing?
Doing good, man. Doing pretty good. This was a busy, busy week for us here at Sunday Surefire with the NFL draft concluding over the weekend. We wasted absolutely no time jumping on a mock draft. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Pretty straightforward. We did a 12-team super flex tight end premium mock draft, full point PPR for receivers and running backs, and for tight ends, 1.75 tight end premium. So that's what we're going to come at you with here, folks, tonight. Just 36 picks here, three rounds of a draft for you. A lot to cover here in this episode. But you know, just know that this draft here was hot off the presses. We finished this thing on Sunday. So as the NFL draft was wrapping up, we dove right in and did one of these on our own. So this is very much a hot off the presses episode. And there's a lot's going to change here with the industry consensus as that kind of gets settled in the coming weeks leading up to your rookie drafts. Just know as well that if you do want some help with your rookie drafts, that we are available here at Sunday Surefire to help you. And the best way to get in contact with us is via the Didit app. That's Didit. You can check them out on X at GetDidIt, that's GetDidIt, for the opportunity to link up with us. What you can do is essentially just get on a one-on-one FaceTime with one of our experts here, and we'll talk to you about anything you want in regards to your dynasty team. This is obviously the time of year where we're probably going to be talking a lot of rookie content. So if you're weighing your decisions on what to do with your draft picks, or if you should be trading into this round, what you should be giving up to do it, we're here to help on that front. So definitely give us a shot on Didit. And it's for iPhone users only at the moment, but it really is a great platform to get some customized advice for your specific dynasty team to help you crush your leagues in 2024 and beyond. But like I said, hard hitting episode here, a lot to get going on. I was lucky enough here as the host to end up with the number one overall pick. Not quite sure how that happened, but I ended up with it. And in the Superflex format, I did not hesitate here. I just went chalk here with Caleb Williams to the Chicago Bears. So the 101 in the NFL draft gets picked right off the top here in our mock draft. I cannot think of a better situation for a number one overall pick to be dropped into from day one between Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Roman Dunze, who was also selected on Thursday night, and also Cole Kmet in tow. I mean, he just has a plethora of weapons to work with, and with Williams here being the number one pick, what that gives you in Dynasty is just such a long runway to be successful. And that just makes you such a safe asset just for years to come here. So Williams, the 101 here, I'm not going to belabor that point too much.
No, me either here. And it's kind of funny. I think the NFL draft, there was a lot of anticipation for that night. We're kind of wondering if there are going to be any early pick trades, and it kind of went chalk. And it's kind of funny because it kind of translated to our mock here too. I really do think these first four picks are pretty much chalk as well. I had the privilege to pick second. Right after Caleb Williams, I went Marvin Harrison. You know, like I said, to me, just another chalk pick. I know we've talked him up in recent episodes too. So I actually went back to back wide receivers as I'm talking chalk picks. With Malik Nabers right afterwards too. So I really don't think you can go wrong with either pick two or pick three in your rookie draft here, especially if you need a position player here. So I went back-to-back wide receivers. Like I said, I think no surprises there as well. But I went MHJ, and then Malik Nabers followed. And then I think Ethan was our fourth pick.
Yes, that was the fourth pick, and I just want to say the NFL draft obviously came and went, but it is one of the, I think, highlights of, or the highlight of the Dynasty offseason for any Dynasty manager. I was looking so forward to it, and it didn't disappoint. It's always a great time. And so we pour all these months and months of just research and time looking at the whole pre-draft process, and for it to basically the biggest piece to come down to the NFL draft is just great to see where these players fall. And I had the privilege of drafting Jaden Daniels at the 104. He was the second overall pick in the NFL draft to the Washington Commanders. And I think Jaden Daniels offers, I mean, as much upside as any quarterback in this draft class, with obviously his Konami code rushing ability. There are some obviously risks with Jaden Daniels. There's some negatives. He takes a lot of massive hits for a guy his size. He had the highest pressure to sack ratio. It was 30.8% in 2022 and 20.2% in 2023. So just holds on to the ball a little too long. Whether that's just him trying to hold on to the ball to make a play, or just maybe not seeing the open guy or reading the defense at a fast enough clip. I know there's been some comparisons to his pressure to sack ratio, comparisons to Justin Fields, which obviously we know how Justin Fields' career has played out thus far. So definitely some risk with Jaden Daniels, but he's a guy that you can kind of swing for the fence here. Because even if he's not a great passer of the football, he's going to get at least a 2-3 year window to show the Commanders that he can or can't play. And with that rushing upside, he has every opportunity to be a top 10 pick. So that was the 104. The 105, I think just with the format with the tight end premium, the 175, I went Brock Bowers. I think Bowers is arguably one of the best prospects in this entire draft. He has just been an absolute elite difference maker at the college level. I mean, he was SEC Freshman of the Year. He won the Mackey Award twice, which I believe he's the first player to ever do that, which is the nation's top tight end. And you just put on the tape, you just see a guy that I think is going to translate perfectly in the NFL. You can line him up anywhere. I think he's going to be just a complete mismatch. You can all across the field. And I think the Raiders, even though they picked Michael Mayer last year, I believe at pick 34, 35th overall, which is obviously a very high second round pick. I just think the Raiders were sitting there and they took best player available. The rumors were a lot of GMs said that Bowers was the biggest deal of the draft. And I kind of tend to agree with them. I think Bowers is just an absolute freak. I think he's going to be a top five tight end potentially right from the rip as a 13th pick to the Raiders. I mean, just on Keep Trade Cut and crowdsource data, he's already the tight end two behind Laporta. He's tight end four on Dynasty League Football rankings. I just thought it was just too good of a prospect to pass up here, even with the quarterbacks still left on the board. I'll be talking the 106 in this draft as well. The 106 was Drake May, quarterback out of UNC, who went to the New England Patriots. Pat, our New England Patriots.
Please tell me he's going to be good. Say something good about him for my sanity as a fan.
Oh, this guy is a lock. I mean, none of these quarterbacks are ever locks, unfortunately. But I think Drake May, he has immense upside. He can run the ball very well. He has a very good arm. He can make all the throws. I know Bill Belichick was picking apart his footwork, but sometimes these guys, when they have that much talent, they tend to kind of rely on that talent with their arm instead of kind of setting their feet and doing what they need to do with their footwork. But I like Drake May. Drake May and Caleb Williams are the 1-2 for the last couple of years. Obviously, Jaden Daniels kind of came out of nowhere this year. But I was very happy with the Patriots pick with Drake May. I thought that was the pick there. I'm excited to see him in New England. And I hope to God he pans out.
Yeah, that kind of leads us to the 7th pick. And I think, you know, if you have the 107 in a super flex league, I think Ethan, you know, the last couple guys Ethan talked, you know, you got the first two top two tier QBs coming off the board with Williams and Daniels. You got your top tier wide receiver talent and Brock Bowers at tight end too. So I think you know those are some solid first five and actually first six picks even with Drake May. I think it's pretty much writing on the wall that all first of those six picks are going to have some quality starter time. So I think, as far as risk, there's less risk with those first six picks there. But if you're sitting at the 7, I think it's still – I don't think you need to sweat it. I went J.J. McCarthy here. I think another solid pick. I think the only difference will be kind of interesting to see how some of these drafts go, where is it May at the 6 or is it J.J. at the 6, where some fantasy owners might look at J.J.'s weapons and kind of think that's a little bit more appealing to have the best, or one of the best, or if not the best, wide receiver in the league with JJ Jefferson, actually, with JJ throwing the ball too. So, I think seven's still somewhat of a safe pick. I think he's obviously the future there. I think they're trying to make it seem like he's got a little bit of a position battle with Darnold. You know, I don't know. Are they going to not want to throw him in the fire right off the gates in week one? Not 100% sure at this time with everything, but I do think it's going to be JJ's job to have. Hopefully he is that week one starter. But like I said, I think first six picks, pretty safe. I'm still comfortable picking McCarthy at pick seven, especially if I need a quarterback in a super flex league. I definitely like the position that JJ's at. So 1-7, I want JJ McCarthy. And I think that takes us to back to Kamish at the 108.
Yeah, before I dive into 108, I just want to go back and touch on the 106, 107 borderline real quick between Drake May and JJ McCarthy. I mean, that's an interesting conversation to have with in terms of like which quarterback should go where and what spot. I mean, you can make arguments for both of them. I think Drake May coming in was just a more highly touted prospect, and obviously getting the number three overall draft capital that assures him that he's going to be given every opportunity to be successful in New England as their starter. But like Aaron said, JJ McCarthy and his weapons, man, like that's a tough thing to pass up in fantasy football, even if his ceiling as a prospect isn't quite as high in some people's estimations. So that's an interesting one to monitor. But rounding out the top eight here, I ended up going with Rome Odunze of the Chicago Bears. He was essentially the last of this top eight prospects on the board. So I definitely wanted to make sure drafting the spot that I walked away with him. And he's a guy that another guy that you're going to have to be maybe a little bit patient with in year one for him to really be that high level fantasy producer that we want him to be. And the reason, of course, for that is what I mentioned off the top here when I started listing Caleb Williams' list of weapons. Guys like Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet to some extent as well. I mean, he's sharing a receiver room with two veteran guys who have been very productive in their careers in multiple places. In the case of DJ Moore, Allen comes over from about a decade with the Chargers, but Allen is the guy that I think could be in Rome's way in 2024, but also the guy I could see seeding or moving on essentially after this coming season. In the last year of his contract and entering his age 32 campaign. And let's be honest, he's never really been the complete picture of health either in his career. So you never know. Maybe he gets hurt or he slips a little bit and Rome is that, you know, hungry rookie who's kind of chomping at the bit to get more work. And maybe down the stretch, Odunze is more productive than he is in the early part of the season. But just know that either way, I don't think Keenan Allen is long for the Bears beyond this season. And I think Rome's, it's just a matter of time until he gets his opportunity. He was a top 10 pick in the NFL draft for a reason. The Bears obviously have designs on using him. They're going to do it sooner rather than later. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if you look back and see Rome as one of the bigger steals in a draft going at around the 108 in 12 team leagues. But this is a kind of a good spot to pause and talk about what's happened so far. I mean, Rome at 108 kind of really does signal the end of a big cluster of players that, you know, this was the top eight coming into the draft. And I think in a lot of places it's going to stay this way. Whereas the 109, it's for sort of a different conversation, which we'll get to. But before we do that, guys, I just want to throw it back to you two and just see, is there anything any strong feelings that you have about this first eight grouping and where these guys went that maybe surprised you a little bit?
I think the top eight, as you said, should be what it is. As you said with Odunze, I think his profile is, I mean, pretty impeccable. He could have been the wide receiver one in almost any other draft class. So I think to get him at the 108 is a steal. I think it's going to – a lot of managers are just going to have to be patient, like you said. But if you can be patient, I mean, you probably have – I mean, Caleb Williams, number 1/2 going forward for the foreseeable future, depending on kind of what happens to DJ Moore. But Allen obviously is on the last leg, so he's going to be, I think, potentially gone after next year or sooner than later. And I think the only really, I think the Drake May, JJ McCarthy, obviously debate. A lot of people are going to have JJ McCarthy over Drake May because of the situations. Obviously, New England, it's not ideal. Not a ton of weapons there. And obviously JJ McCarthy has Justin Jefferson, Addison, TJ Hockenson. I mean, they have a ton of guys to throw the ball to. So he gets put in a perfect situation. And I think a lot of people don't like the Bowers landing spot, but I don't really care about anybody outside Devontae Adams when it comes to Brock Bowers, because Brock Bowers is instantly, I think, going to be the number two target. You don't draft the guy at 13 not to use him. I don't really care about Michael Mayer. I don't care about Jacoby Myers. They're not even close to the football players that Brock Bowers is. So I know a lot of people are going to think that maybe a little high for Bowers, but I think with the premium and the prospect that he is, I just think it's safe. And sometimes I think it's a little better sometimes to go with a little safer pick in the first round. As obviously we saw Harrison and Neighbors go over the quarterback two, and we saw Bowers go over the quarterback three and four. And as I said before, I think people are just kind of getting sick of being burned with quarterbacks. So I can definitely see positional players being picked in front of some of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's good dialogue. I think the first five picks are pretty much the safest picks. And I think throughout this draft, there's a couple times you got to figure out if you want to pivot or not. Like I said, if you got that pick six, I think you kind of are stuck with that decision between JJ or Drake May. I mean, talent-wise, I think Drake May has the upper hand, but then you look at, you know, what position they're going into, as we keep saying. I mean, you also have to consider, obviously, where they're playing, right? Obviously, JJ will be able to be playing in a dome for his career too. So, you know, you may possibly want to consider that, you know, and come playoff time. You know, if you're really trying to look for, you know, what's the final straw, if you're old fashioned trying to go pros cons, you know, maybe you might get that nitty gritty with some of that stuff. But I can see pick five and six get an interchange in different in many drafts there too. And then Adunze, I think that's another one where you're picking talent over a position coming in there too. And then really after, you know, really from that point moving forward, there's, I think, a couple guys that might actually be in pretty nice positions or opportunities from the wide receiver position to have to be the first or second option, but they don't have Adunze's talent, or at least coming out of the draft there too. So I think you know, it's kind of a moral debate there. To, you know, sometimes do you go with the talent, or do you go with kind of a talent slash position? Which it'll be fun talking in these next couple picks. Where are there any guys that are worth jumping Adunze if you're that kind of more on the greedy side and not willing to wait?
Yeah, I guess the last piece I'll add to this top eight discussion is, this really should go this way. Maybe not exactly the order we went in, but those eight guys should be the first eight guys off the board in drafts in this format. And I think this is an interesting thing where you should know, at least know that this is in some order, it's going to be the consensus eight guys coming off the board. So if you're sitting with the top eight pick and maybe you have 107 or 108, you don't love the situation that you're in, you should know that, like, if you want to draft someone else outside of this, you should there. It's probably prudent for you to move back and collect more value and get your guy a few picks later, because in all likelihood, it's going to be this eight guys coming off the board. And as I've gone on in my dynasty career, I do kind of blend the thought process of I want to know what consensus is, and I want to know who quote unquote should go where, so that I can then at least make sure I'm getting enough value off the board if I'm going to move back. If my guy is a little bit later in the first round, then I want to know if I can move back. But I want to make sure that's on the table. But I do also want to make sure I come away with my guys out of draft. So there is a little bit of a song and dance to be played in that respect. So I do just think it's important that you know what consensus is, even though you don't necessarily have to be a slave to it. Like you can have some independent thought as well, and I encourage you to do that, but just know that there's probably value to be had in moving out of a top eight pick if your guy is in that next cluster of guys. So let's talk about that next cluster. Let's get right back to 109 here. And the beautiful thing about 109 is that if you look at five different mock drafts, it's very possible that you see five different players selected here at the 109, which is why that and a lot of experts will probably tell you that the 109 is where drafts really start, where it starts getting interesting. And so I had that decision in our exercise at 109. I ended up going with Xavier Worthy of the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that pick makes Aaron very, very happy, taking one of his hometown guys. But, you know, I think if you If you dive into it here, he gets that late first round draft capital pick 32 to Kansas City. Obviously, gets paired up with Mahomes and Andy Reid. Just kind of a you know the those offensive geniuses there together, just been crushing the league for the last five to seven years. Their offense as good as they were. I mean, they were actually kind of at their worst maybe in the Mahomes era last season. Oddly enough, still resulted in a Super Bowl, of course, but they really kind of were missing that speed element on the outside, and that's where Worthy really can fill that void. I know they have Hollywood Brown there, but he's on a 1 year contract, and I you know maybe he crushes this year and he sticks around, but you don't draft Xavier Worthy in the first round not to have designs on using him. And we also know that Travis Kelce, you know, despite him getting that extension today, I do think that with him entering his age 35 season, you know, we know he's not going to be there much longer. Maybe a couple more. If they get two more seasons out of him, I think that's probably a win for the Chiefs. But at some point, Xavier Worthy, it just profiles to be the alpha in this offense. And I think that, for fantasy football purposes, is just going to be insanely valuable. And it's as good a chance as anybody that he hits at 109 as anyone else. So if I have to start this next grouping of somebody, I'm willing to take a shot in the guy who's linked up with Mahomes and Andy Reid for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, can't argue with you there as far as Lincoln Mahomes with weapons. I mean, as we know in past years, we haven't quite kind of understood how some of the wide receivers are going to pan out, and kind of knowing you know how they're going to fit in Reed's system and whatnot. But I'm liking Xavier more and more. More I've been looking at it as well. So I think Xavier Worthy has definitely climbed up the board. Obviously with Chiefs training up for him, and then also obviously in the fantasy community as well. So, also throwing out the fact of Rashee Rice, you know, kind of not knowing, what's going to happen there, with possible multi-game suspension, as we know too. So, definitely good pick. Can't argue with that. That kind of leads us to the 110, and honestly, the 110, I kind of look at it in a lot of years kind of similarly, where you can kind of pivot. It can kind of be a position where maybe if you don't trade back, I think as Kamish said earlier too, where if you're starting to get a little bit, you're still in the first round, you got high value guys still that are going to be coming off the board, but you're still in a position where like you don't know which way to pivot. This is one where actually I went the first running back in the draft. I went Jonathan Brooks at the 110, kind of for that reason where there's a lot of good wide receiver talent coming up, and excited to name a lot of guys coming up here. But Jonathan Brooks is one where I think where, you know, being the first running back off the board with Carolina, I think, you know, although there is a little bit of company he joins with, you know, Chuba Hubbard taking over that position, just beating out Miles Sanders last year. I think there is, you know, a little bit of contract opportunity where it can be Brooks's job, maybe even halfway through the 2024 season. And obviously we're sharing time with Hubbard and Sanders as well, but being able to take that over, I think if you are in a position where you can be a little bit more patient with them and really looking at maybe a 2025 year where, causing some damage in your league, I think Brooks may be worth the wait. Because sometimes with these wide receivers, you got to wait with them anyway, and they may never break out and be those studs or be those one or two options too. So I think, you know, having the first running back off the board with Carolina, I think, you know, kind of balancing that risk reward, I think Brooks, you can be slightly patient, but I think you will see, get some nice playing time where they're definitely going to want to try him out this year too. So a little bit of a risk, I know, where there's, like I said, that there is some nice talent still left on the board at the wide receiver position, which is where the 111 goes with Brian Thomas. I think this is one where, you know, when I was looking at it at the 110 position, I'm like, yep, not going to grab Brian Thomas when I know my boy Gabe Davis is in the way there over in Jacksonville. So I do think Brian Thomas is another good prospect, but looking at, you know, who Brian Thomas has to share reps with Kirk and Gabe Davis and Evan Engram and them over there in Jacksonville, that I think he'll be a year one starter. Definitely get a lot of reps and receptions there too, but I think you gotta somewhat wait for some of these guys to kind of emerge a little bit too. So Brian Thomas went immediately right after Jonathan Brooks. Then I'll kick it over to Ethan.
Yeah, we all know I like Brian Thomas Jr. They just released Zay Jones today, so obviously that clears up just another body there. I think he's easily going to take over. No offense, Aaron, Gabe Davis's role, but Gabe Davis should have every opportunity, obviously, to start out. But I think talent will prevail there. But that brings us to the end of the conclusion of the first round with a pick I had, and I went Ladd McConkey. He was the 34th pick. The Chargers traded up with New England to draft Ladd McConkey. Honestly, I kind of wish the Patriots stayed there to draft him, but I did think they actually got pretty good value for that pick. But yeah, Ladd, I just think he has every opportunity to be Justin Herbert's number one target. He's a player that just always knows where to be. He can run any route, and he's a very, very good athlete. His biggest knocks in college were just his health. Obviously, he's been a little injury plagued, and his lack of production. So, I mean, if he can stay healthy and he can kind of take that next step at the NFL level, I think it's wheels up for a guy like Ladd McConkey. And he's definitely a guy that I would love to get at the end of the first round.
Okay, and that's going to conclude the first round of our mock draft. So that was, I think, no massive shocks there overall, I'd say. I'll just recap it real quick here. Caleb Williams, 101. 102 is Marvin Harrison Jr. The 103 is Malik Nabers. 104, Jaden Daniels. 105 was Brock Bowers. 106, Drake May. 107, J.J. McCarthy. 108, Rome Odunze. 109, Xavier Worthy. 110, Jonathan Brooks. 111, Brian Thomas Jr., and 112, Ladd McConkey to the Chargers. And then we're going to get right back to Ethan here, who's, I guess in this exercise, he's coming off a championship because he's drafting at he just drafted at the 112, and if we're going to snake it in this case, he gets the 201 as well.
Yeah, so obviously we just had back-to-back receivers, and I ended up going another receiver in Ricky Pearsall at the 201. The 49ers picked him at pick 31. I think that was a pretty surprising pick for a lot of people. I thought I pegged him as easily a lock for a top 45, but to see him in the first round, I was not expecting that. I was actually hoping the Patriots I was hoping they would have had a chance to get him in the early second at pick 34, but obviously he went in the first. But Ricky Pearsall is a guy kind of like Ladd McConkey who can create separation, can run all the routes, very, very good athlete. And I like what the 49ers do with their skill position players. Obviously there's a lot of uncertainty with Debo and Ayuk. Obviously Ayuk doesn't have a long-term deal. I think there's an out in Debo's contract in 2025, but I know he has a decent cap hit. But and obviously with Debo's getting older, he misses time quite often. So to get a first round receiver at the 201 that was drafted to the 49ers, I was pretty excited about that. And just to make a comment, obviously, on all these receivers and positional players going over two other first-round quarterbacks, I think it's probably not as consensus, but I guess it depends kind of who you're drafting with. I know some people are so locked into, hey, it's super flex. You need to draft the quarterbacks. Because obviously, if they do hit, they have a lot of value. But obviously, there's a bigger probability that they're not going to hit. And I think with this draft, obviously, we saw six quarterbacks go early on in the first round. I believe in the top 12 picks, there was six quarterbacks taken. And I wasn't a huge like Bo Nix guy. I think Penix does have the tools, but obviously, I'll touch on him in a second. But obviously, you have to exercise patience with Penix. And then Bo Nix, I'm not willing to pass up on a Brian Thomas Jr. or Ladd McConkey or even a Ricky Pearsall in some regard to draft a guy I wasn't very high on and a guy that could easily flame out of the NFL. But I know a lot of people are going to have those quarterbacks propped up, but and then obviously if you turn the flip the coin, right? If you just look at the receivers, everybody just assumes you're drafting high-end wide receiver twos or wide receiver twos, potentially wide receiver ones. But then when you look at the wide receivers that are already in the league, I mean, At wide receiver 19, you have T. Higgins. At wide receiver 20, DJ Moore. I mean, Zay Flowers, who had a good rookie year. Wide receiver 22, Addison. Wide receiver 23. So it's like these rookies need to come into the league and compete with some pretty good receivers. So there's no guarantee that any of these guys are going to come into the league and give you wide receiver 2, wide receiver 1 production. Odds are they're probably going to be wide receiver 3s, maybe even wide receiver 4s. And obviously there's always a chance to bust, but that brings me to the next pick, the 202, and that is Michael Penix. And as I said, you just have to exercise a ton of patience. We talked about patience with Odunze, but at least Odunze is going to be on the field playing. Penix probably won't be on the field for at least 2 years. So, which is why I passed up on him. I mean, the way I build my dynasty teams, I like to lock in my quarterbacks via trade usually and get certainty at the position. And then I can use my rookie drafts to get positional players. So, with all the picks I had in this draft going receivers and positional players, it's kind of the way the mindset I have, unless it's a quarterback that I believe in and a quarterback that obviously got that top 3, top 5 draft capital. That's, I mean, kind of been consensus throughout the process. And then I'm okay, obviously drafting that guy, hoping to potentially flip it for a bigger profit, AKA CJ Stroud last year. I mean, if you got CJ Stroud, in the middle of the first round, or even at the 104, 105, I mean, his value, obviously, I mean, the value of him skyrocketed. So there's a ton of different ways you can kind of look at these picks and how you want to attack your rookie draft, whether you want to draft because, hey, you're in win now mode. I want to draft maybe an extra piece to help you put over the edge, or you're probably better off in win now mode trading these picks for veterans, or, hey, I'm going to pick best player available or best value available to potentially flip that in the future. So there's a couple of different ways to look at it, but that was the 202, Michael Penix. So, Aaron, I believe you're up at the 203.
Yeah, that's right. I had the 203, and I think it is a pretty funny conversation. I think depending on the scenario, I think, as you said, there's going to be a run of positional players that I think all drafts will see after those top QBs go. And I think it will be interesting when the Penix and Bo Nix goes. I think it's kind of, to me, it's kind of funny. I think we've all been in some leagues where, you know, if you got a couple dynasty managers that have really like saved up for, you know, 2024, this is my year, I got like 8 picks in this draft, or maybe you got like 5 in a row, right? To me, the way I look at like Michael Penix getting drafted, you know, I guess if you got to decide between Penix or Bo Nix, if you're one of the dynasty managers, you got a bunch of picks, it's almost like playing the roulette table, and you're just putting, you got like 20 numbers you're going to play. Like, okay, I hit, but okay, I played 20 numbers, right? So I think to Ethan's point, you're kind of ruling out probability, you know, what's the risk reward with it. I think if you're one of the fantasy managers where you only have one pick and you're at that 203, and I think if Penix just got picked and you really need a quarterback, I think you're really happy to get Bo Nix at 2-3. You know, I think it's second round. I think you're happy to see some of those wide receivers go. If you're in a super flex league and you really got to re-up on the position and get young again, or actually maybe need them as a starter for years to come, I think, you know, if that's the one pick, that's what you got to spend it on at that point, right? So I think it does depend, as Ethan said, kind of what position your team is kind of made up of. If you got, you know, it just depends on how many picks you have, what position you're at. But to me, yeah, 2-3, I'd be pretty satisfied getting Bo Nix. I think another quarterback where I do see him starting over his competition this year in Denver too. So I'd be happy with Bo Nix at 2-3. It's not too high, and second round quarterback and a super flex that's probably going to be starting year one. I think that's a good position to try that out with. But that was my 2-3 pick, and I'll let Kamish take it over from here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that'll just put the bow in the quarterback conversation. I mean, this early second round is. If you're going to take a shot at a quarterback who's going to the first half of the first round, I mean, between Penix and Nix, like this is a prime territory to do it early in the second round. A lot of leagues, like Ethan mentioned, are probably going to have him a little bit earlier just because they are quarterbacks and it's a superflex format, and that's not necessarily the wrong way to go about it if you're drafting in the late first round. I mean, those are guys that are going to, at least in the case of Bo Nix, that are going to be scoring points right away this year, and it's probably going to get multiple years to succeed. So I'm more so in lockstep with Ethan, where I don't necessarily want to be drafting those guys, but I can see a scenario where if you're really in need of the position, it might be a good opportunity to do so. And I'm not going to blast anyone for taking a starting NFL quarterback in the late part of round one, but I'm more comfortable taking shots on them here in the early part of round two. But let's keep it moving. Let's go to 204. And we're going to talk about a team who they actually took a shot on a guy in the early part of round two, and that's Keon Coleman of the Buffalo Bills. And admittedly, I was not the biggest fan of Coleman throughout the process and leading up to the pre-draft, but him going here at 204, I think the juice is worth the squeeze on Coleman. He's never going to be the biggest separator in the world, we know that, but he has every opportunity to become Josh Allen's number one target, which has obviously been great for fantasy if you've had Stephon Diggs for any length of time over the last handful of years. And Coleman's game is completely different from Diggs's, like in every way, shape, or form. Diggs is a separator, whereas Keon Coleman is a guy who's going to win in contested catch situations. So maybe there is a philosophical change coming somewhat here in Buffalo, but the Bills told you with their actions that they're really high on Coleman taking him the first pick in the second round of the NFL draft. And I think he could be profiled as a great red zone weapon at the NFL level. You know, Buffalo is actually tied for third in trips to the red zone in 2023, so they get down there a lot. And we know they're not afraid to let Josh Allen drop back and throw the ball in the red zone, although a lot of the times he ends up going in there with his legs on his own, which is kind of annoying sometimes if you have those pass catchers. But with Allen starting to creep towards 30, they might want to take some pressure off of him in those areas so he's not taking those hits all the time. And Coleman is a nice young guy who can go up there and box people out and win at the goal line and put up 6 points. So I do like the fact that he got top 40 capital invested in him. And as we're kind of getting towards the middle part of the second round, I'm definitely okay with taking a shot on him here at the 204. And that leads me to the next one here. That's 205. I'm going to go to the running back position with Trey Benson, Arizona Cardinals. And this is kind of back-to-back drift picks where I just go ahead and select prospects I wasn't enamored with during the evaluation process. But, Benson here, he ends up with Arizona. You know, we didn't expect many running backs to go in the first two rounds in this draft. So him going in the early part of round three is actually pretty good capital invested in a running back in the form of Benson here. He ends up in going to what looks like it's going to be a high-scoring offense led by Kyler Murray. They add Marvin Harrison, and they obviously have Trey McBride. It took a big step in year two. And the only competition for work on this depth chart, of course, is James Conner, who's been pretty solid in the couple of years he's been in Arizona. But he's getting older. He's entering his age 29 season. He's in the final year of his contract. Let's be honest with Conner. This is another guy who's never been the picture of health either throughout his NFL career. He's played seven seasons. Never once has he played a full campaign. So those things typically don't get better with age, particularly at the running back position. So Connor, those miles are adding up the last year of his deal. And Benson, I don't think he's going to win this job outright out of camp or anything, but I think if you're willing to be a little bit patient with him, he could be a guy who ends up coming on strong at the end of the year. He even becomes a league winner down the stretch.
Yeah, I like those last two picks. They're some of my pre-draft guys that I was kind of high on too. I think with Coleman, you know, I bring up Gabe Davis in every possible scenario too. But hey, someone's got to fill the seven touchdown shoes. And I think after he was drafted, I was like, hey, I'm gonna put his over under and touchdown 6.5 right off the gate. I think he's one where, hey, is he gonna get a touchdown or is he gonna get a catch? I think he could possibly be one of those scenarios again, unfortunately, but definitely has the touchdown upside in the red zone. Definitely like Trey Benson as well, as you said, for all the facts you said with kind of joining a team with an aging running back is always a good position to join. But I went back to wide receiver at this position, 2-6, middle second round. I love mid seconds. There's a lot less pressure. You can really get under the radar guys. You can get a lot of talent still too, especially in super flex. I want Xavier Leggett here with Carolina here, getting the still first draft, first round capital being 32nd pick of the draft. I think Jonathan Mingo had every opportunity in the world last year with Bryce Young, and I think Carolina was kind of fed up with that. They need kind of someone to step in alongside Deontay Johnson. I think Leggett, I think him being kind of a Southern boy down there too. I think he's going to fit in really well with the team. I do actually think Carolina will move the ball. I mean, they'll be able to move the ball better than they did in 2023. I think that's almost for sure. Hopefully, don't quote me on that, but I think he's in a great position, great body, great position to have a role right away. And being mid second round pick here, I think it's just a somewhat of a safe pick where I think he's going to get a lot of playing time with a young quarterback thrown to him too. So I went Xavier Leggett, and right after him was Adonai Mitchell with being drafted with the Colts too. So two more back to back wide receivers, as we know, a lot of talent at this position this draft. So it does make it very exciting because there's so many wide receivers to pick from. I think Mitchell comes in another position battle where he can probably still be the top three wide receiver. Does have to beat out a few guys over there in Indianapolis, but I think with this size and speed, I think he will be able to kind of fit in over there with the Colts too. So Mitchell went right after Leggett in this draft. So that was actually 2-6 and 2-7 before I kick it over to Ethan with the 208.
At the 208, Malachi Corley was drafted. He was the first pick in the third round by the New York Jets. I believe it picked 65. So obviously pretty good capital. I mean, the Jets traded up with Carolina to get Malachi Corley, aka the Yak King. I mean, this guy had more yards after catch than any other receiver in the country. Got a lot of tunnel screens, bubble screens, short, obviously, plays in the line of scrimmage. And he made the most of it. But this is a guy you want to get the ball in his hands and just let him work. So Malachi Corley was one of my kind of favorite kind of late round targets. Good size, a lot of comparisons to Deebo Samuel. I think the Jets can use him very well in that offense. Obviously you have Mike Williams and Wilson there, but I think Corley can carve out a role as a slot receiver, a guy, like I said, you just want to get the ball in his hands. So that was Malachi Corley at the 2-8. And at the 209, my RB1 pre-draft was Jalen Wright, and he goes at the 209. The Miami Dolphins drafted Jalen Wright at pick 20 of the fourth round, 120 overall. But what I really liked about this pick in terms of a team investment is the Miami Dolphins actually traded their 25 third round pick to get back to get into the fourth round, because I don't think they had a fourth or fifth round pick. They traded their future third to get into the fourth to draft the speedster Jalen Wright. And this kind of kicked a huge wave of running back picks. There was a ton of running backs drafted in the fourth round, which honestly, these days, the fourth round is pretty good capital for any running back. And for the Miami Dolphins to be like, hey, we're willing to sacrifice our future third to go and get this guy, I thought was pretty telling. Mostert has very little money guaranteed to him. He's obviously an older running back. I think this is probably his last year in Miami. And we all know A-Chain and Mostert, they do get hurt. A-Chain, I don't think is a guy you can give 15 to 20 touches to, or he's going to be on the sideline sooner rather than later. So I think this is going to be an A-Chain, Jalen Wright backfield sooner than later. And I think definitely for next year, I think these are going to be the top two backs in this offense. Obviously, this offense is just full of speed, and they're just adding another speedster in Jalen Wright. So I actually loved that landing spot for Jalen Wright. I was getting a little worried for him when he slipped out of the third round. I thought the third round was his floor. Apparently that didn't happen, but I think he probably couldn't have went to a better spot in terms of just like team investment. Obviously the spot initially isn't ideal, obviously with Mostert and A-Chain, but like I said, I think Jalen Wright has every opportunity to kind of Carver role in that backfield. And then obviously with the injuries at that position, and then just looking forward, I think he's going to get opportunity. So I was happy to draft Jalen Wright at the 209. That brings us to the 210, where Roman Wilson was picked. Obviously, anytime Pittsburgh drafts a receiver, you need to pay attention. Roman Wilson was picked 84th in the third round by the Pittsburgh Steelers. This guy's very athletic, very fast. Obviously, a national champion for Michigan. One of J.J. McCarthy's favorite targets. And I think he has all the athleticism and upside in the world. And there's really not a lot of target competition in Pittsburgh. I mean, you have obviously George Pickens there. Austin's still there. Pratt Freiermuth, but obviously Deontay Johnson just was shipped out to Carolina. So I think Roman Wilson's going to have all the opportunity in the world. And with the track record of the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think he's a great dart throw in the back end of the second.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think it's funny when we were doing this mock, I mean, you stole Malachi from me, and then you stole the pick right before mine with Wilson, snatched him right before me too. So I think Wilson, as you said, could be one of the biggest sleepers of the draft, and as of our fantasy drafts too, extreme potential, as you said, just with how Pittsburgh's history of legacy of drafting wide receivers, and I think just his position that he's able to kind of fight for. But that kind of led me to the 211, almost ending round two, and this guy dropped on the board significantly, right? Where this guy was at one point maybe talking to be a back end first round pick too. So definitely drop in the NFL draft a little bit. Not sure if scouts were seeing something else too, but with Troy Franklin ending up with Denver, I did pick him at the 211. However, the biggest thing that he's got going for him, he does link back up with his college quarterback with Bo Nix, where over from Oregon too. So anytime you do get that pairing of the college tandems, I do think they kind of look out for each other. I think Franklin does have a good opportunity, as Judy just left as well too. So I think I think he ends up being a good value late second. I think coupling that with just pairing with Bo Nix after the Judy departure, as I said. So I'd be comfortable grabbing Troy Franklin here at the 211.
I think the Denver Broncos got a steal on Troy Franklin, drafting him at pick 102 in the fourth round. I mean, I was kind of disappointed that he was dropping so far, and he dropped to the top 100, and I'm like, man, this stinks. And then Denver kind of swooped in at the last minute and grabbed him at 102 overall. And I just kind of think that helped save his value just a little bit, because he is getting linked up with Bo Nix in an opportunity where there's not a ton in that wide receiver room for him to compete with. So I do think he has a shot there in Denver. And I think that's why he's slotting into round two at all, is because he got the landing spot that he did, even if it wasn't quite the capital that we were hoping for. But we'll see how he pans out. I'm going to close out the second round here with a tight end. This is the second tight end selected in our mock, and I'm going to go with Ben Sinnott. Last pick of the second round. I just think he's an absolute steal in this format for taking premium. He's my tight end too in this class, behind only Brock Bowers. He is going to play behind Zach Ertz to start his career in Washington, but Zach Ertz has been around forever. He's 34 years old, entering 2024. He's under 1 year contract as well. And for what it's worth, guys, I mean, the last two tight ends to start their career behind Zach Ertz both panned out. And those, of course, being Dallas Goedert in Philadelphia and Trey McBride in Arizona. So maybe Zach Ertz is just a tight end whisperer, and as soon as he's done playing football and wants to hang him up, someone should be paying him to come be their tight end coach. But so maybe he just kind of has a Padawan under him at all times, and Ben Sinnott is just the next guy in that line. That's what I'm hoping for here. But I don't expect big things from Sinnott out of the gate, but if you have an aging tight end on your roster, and or maybe you just want some depth of the position, that you can be patient behind a starter that you already have, I think he's a great guy to do that in the late second round, early third round borderline, if he lasts that long. So I was happy to grab Sinnott at the 212. And we'll recap the second round here quickly before we move on to round three. We got 201, Ricky Pearsall. The 202 was Michael Penix. The 203 was Bo Nix. 204, Keon Coleman. The 205, Trey Benson. 206, Xavier Leggett. 207, Adonai Mitchell. 208 was Malachi Corley. 209, Jalen Wright. 210, Roman Wilson. 211, Troy Franklin. And then 212, Ben Sinnott. And we'll just jump right into round three. And this is sort of going to be a rapid-fire exercise where we kind of talk about these guys. I mean, round three, these are you're quickly getting into dart throw territory where you're just looking for some type of upside. And I started here at the wide receiver position with Jermaine Burton to Cincinnati. He ends up going in the third round, which I end up drafting him here in the third round, I should say, which is what I call go get your guy territory. And, you know, from this stage of the game, I just want guys with past the viability. So Tyler Boyd likely moving on here creates an opportunity for the third receiver in this offense. And the last 2 years, his team was healthy. Boyd in 21 and 2022, Boyd was WR31 and WR33 respectively in those campaigns. So he was somewhat viable, especially if you play in leagues that have multiple flex spots. Those mid-range WR3s can give you a little bit of something in a pinch. But we also know that the number two receiver on that team, T. Higgins, is on the franchise tag looking for a long-term extension that the Bengals have yet to give him. He's even gone as far as demanding a trade from the team. So who knows if Higgins ever plays another snap in Cincinnati or reports to camp or anything. And I just see that Joe Burrow is the quarterback for this team for a long time, and I want his pass catching weapons. And it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase all the time, of course, but I think there's plenty of opportunity for a second guy to feast in this offense and be productive. And I think there's just a lot worse dart throws you can make than taking Jermaine Burton here at the 301.
I agree with that. I like that take too. I like Burton potentially being able to be a riser in that Cincinnati offense, especially if Higgins does get traded. So great take there. As you said, this round, third round being a go get your guy type of round where I do like that. Third round is where sometimes you can get nice cheap trades to go get your guy, as you said. And I'm a big handcuff guy too. I love grabbing my handcuffs for my starting running backs. And, you know, if you're a Josh Jacobs owner, I do think you might want to consider trying to trade for a pick, depending on where it is in the third round. And this is where I went Marshawn Lloyd getting drafted to Green Bay. I think arguably, I think a lot of fantasy experts liked him, you know, top three. Some of them liked him the number one running back in their opinion. A lot of them liked Lloyd too. So I think, as we all know, if your stud running back goes down, if Jacobs does have an injury or something like that, and you have Lloyd as a handcuff, with the Green Bay offense being you know, run heavy during playoff time, needing touchdowns, I think Lloyd is going to be a solid backup. I don't know what it's going to turn like for his career for a starter, because I know Jacobs signed a nice healthy contract, but I do think he is worthy of being one of the top handcuffs in the league the years to come. So he's another guy.
That's interesting, Aaron. Let me jump on that real fast. I know we're kind of in a lightning round here, but the Jacobs deal is really just a shiny, oh yeah, 4 years, 40 something million, all that. It's really the way it's structured. It's actually a 1 year contract. They'll actually save money against the cap if they cut him after this season. So I'm with you though. It's a good sleeper there for that reason, because if Jacobs falters in 2024, Lloyd could very well swoop in and carve out a role for himself. And if it doesn't go well for Jacobs, there's no reason for them to pay him beyond this season. So just interesting thing to point out there with that situation.
That's right. So yeah, a potential trade up guy. Like I said, third round trades are definitely fun. Don't sleep if you don't have any third round picks. Sometimes they're fun to trade for. And actually, Ian, Ethan, I'll let you and Kamish talk this next one, being one of your Patriot guys. Right after Lloyd went Jalen Polk. I don't know, actually, if you want to say any your 2 cents, Ethan or Kamish, and I'll let you guys take it from there.
Reach. the reach of the early part of the second round was Jalen Polk out of Washington. And look, Ethan and I talked about Polk. He was the last receiver we talked about in our rookie draft, our rookie receiver show. And like, I don't think either of us really hate Jalen Polk, to be honest with you. It's more so where they took Jalen Polk. You know, they moved back in the early, a few picks, and I think they got decent value to move back, but they also missed out on a couple of guys in the process of doing that. Mainly Ladd McConkey was the guy that I know Ethan was really high on that range. They skipped out on him so they could move back and draft Jalen Polk here. And it just got the sense of a guy that would have been there later down the board. And even if the rumors that other teams were sniffing around him were true, then so be it. You missed out on Jalen Polk. Like, I do like the general sense that they needed a wide receiver and they targeted a guy that they liked and went and got him, and that's fine. But I also don't love the fact that it was Jalen Polk. I just thought there was better talent on the board at that point. But for fantasy, there is some opportunity for him, I think, just given the how desolate the Patriots wide receiver room is. And I think he, you know, if he can kind of put it together and be a complete player, maybe he wins in the contested catch situations as well, which is supposed to be the calling card. We'll see. But overall, I wasn't a huge fan of it from an NFL standpoint, but if Phil's a need on the team in the third round, I mean, you're getting an early second round receiver. I think that's about as good as you can do from a draft capital standpoint. Ethan, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with all those points. I think just in terms of a rookie draft, I think you are getting very, very good value in the third round, getting a top 40 selection in Jalen Polk. But my initial reaction when the Patriots drafted him was kind of like, ew. Which is not ideal. It's not like Polk is even that bad. It's just, as Kamish said, I thought there was receiver targets that were better than Polk, and they just traded back from the pick where Ladd McConkey went, which I didn't love. But Polk, I mean, he was a 1,000-yard receiver this past year. He's a guy, by all accounts, that, I mean, he's a good route runner. He knows where to be. I think he fits what the Patriots want to do in terms of a guy they can rely on, understanding the offense, knowing where to be. And he should walk into New England as the alpha right away, just because that's how depleted of talent they are at that position. So we'll see. I really, really hope Polk isn't another second round swing and a miss for the Patriots, but definitely not the direction I would have went if I was the Patriots GM. That brings us to the 304, where Blake Corum went. And I think this is another smash pick in the third round. Not necessarily because I see Blake Corum taking over for Kyron Williams, but obviously with the direction of the NFL and the committee backfield, to get a third round running back, pick 83, top 100 selection in a good offense, and a guy of Blake Corum's kind of status, I think this is, like I said, a smash pick here. And I do think he is going to carve out a role. The Rams probably thought, hey, we can't give our 200-pound running back the absolute workhorse role that we did last year. He's not going to last. So they obviously drafted Blake Corum. They actually just signed Boston Scott today. So I think the Rams are telling us that they kind of want to go to a more committee approach, even though Kyron Williams was an absolute animal last year. But to get Blake Corum at the 304, a lot later than I anticipated. So I was very happy with that. At the 305, Jatavion Sanders went, and based on the format, the 1.75 premium, I think this was a good pick. He was the first pick in the fourth round, pick 101, so nearly a top 100 pick. He was projected to go in rounds two or three, so a slight fall for him. But, I mean, there's no tight end of consequence in the Carolina Panthers. You have Tommy Tremble, Amir Smith-Marset, and Cam Sims. So I think Jatavion Sanders is going to be your basically week one starter for Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. So I think in the at the 305, I think Jatavion Sanders was a good pick here based on the premium. At the 306, Luke McCaffrey went on the board. He was the last pick in the third round, so pick 100. So I mean, great job for Luke McCaffrey being the top 100 pick going to the Washington Commanders, where I think there is opportunity. Obviously, Curtis Samuel just left there. You have Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin still, but there's definitely some opportunity in Washington. And obviously, Luke McCaffrey, basically a clone of his older brother, Christian McCaffrey, in terms of size and metrics. So definitely a good upside swing here at the 306.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think you got a couple guys that can carve out roles. Here, even we're talking to almost close out the third round here too. So, 3-7. Actually, when Spencer Rattler here, where kind of another one you can maybe dive a little bit deep here too, but not a horrible position he's kind of running into, landing with the Saints. He's got potential. You know, he could become a potential starter. Depending how the Saints season goes, it's most likely maybe 2025 and beyond. But I think he's still talent. He was still a talented quarterback in college, and in most rookie drafts, I think he would definitely get drafted a little bit higher in a super flex draft. In normal talent pools, go to. So I want Spencer Rattler taking a shot at him if you want a little bit of depth and potential upside there at the 3-7.
Yeah, that Rattler's a fun pick there in the middle of the third round. A guy that, you know, it's a small investment to make, and who knows? Like, I mean, who knows if Derek Carr's long for the Saints job? I mean, that kind of guy just has a feel of a player who's kind of petering out as he has been in the league a decade plus at this point and really hasn't ever brought a team anywhere. So Rattler was a very high profile player that for years in college it just never really fully materialized. So yeah, great. I think it's a really good pick for the Saints from a real football standpoint. I think it's a really fun pick here in the middle of the third round, and who knows if it works out, he really could be onto something. And if it doesn't, it was a mid third round pick investment anyway. So good pick there. I actually got sniped on him in this exercise. I was about to pounce on him there. So thanks for that, Aaron. But I did get one of my favorite running backs in this class at 308. At least from a, you know, I had fun watching this guy on tape too. It was Bucky Irving. I was hoping he'd go a little bit earlier in the draft, but wasn't meant to be. And you know, I did go receiver earlier in the third round, but I do typically love taking running backs in this range because it just doesn't take much for them to become viable. And I'm just looking at Bucky Irving specifically, the combine really did not do him any favors. But I think he put enough on film here to warrant this draft capital. He goes in round four, lands at Tampa Bay. There isn't a ton on the depth chart beyond Rashad White. I think this is still Rashad White's job, but it was an interesting pick because I think he and White have some similar characteristics to their games, specifically where they can both catch the ball out of the backfield. And I think they what they wanted in Tampa was just some duality to Rashad White, where they didn't really have anything like him on the depth chart. And it sounds like they're going to roll with White, and they want someone to come in and can do a lot of the same things. Yeah, so they're not really maybe their offense just doesn't skip a beat. I don't think Irving has the build to handle a big workload or anything like that, but I think this is a worthwhile pick. And if Rashad White does ever miss time, I think Bucky could step in there and do some things from a fantasy standpoint, particularly in a solid offense with the Buccaneers. But let's go to another team here you could say a solid offense in the San Francisco 49ers. With a 309, I draft Isaiah Garrido out of Louisville. I go back to the running back pool here and take him at this pick. And as we know, the 49ers, they love running the ball with Christian McCaffrey. It's really fun to watch. It's great for fantasy when CMC is going off. But you know, he's made it through the last 2 years healthy. But you know, we know what father time does to running back as they start to age. And CMC is getting a little bit longer in the tooth here. And it wasn't that long ago that McCaffrey had that quote unquote injury prone label slapped all over him. So you know, this is just kind of maybe an insurance pick for them, but you know, if maybe they see McCaffrey start to slip and this guy comes in here, athletic freak coming in, I think maybe it's something that the stars align in the future. He's the guy there. You know, you never know. A lot has to happen to get there, but at 309, you're not exactly risking a whole heck of a lot there to get a shot on this guy here in this stage.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, I think as I joke, it's definitely cuffing season when it comes to these late third round picks here too. So, I think moving on to this late pick, where are we at? 310 now. My 310 was actually Brennan Rice. Kind of had a fun one there. You know, a lot of lineage going on with this draft all over the couple great examples of different position players with their father played or maybe their brothers in the league or something like that too. But Brennan Rice, I mean, catching footballs, same as the best to ever do it, right? So with son of Jerry Rice, I think him landing with Harbaugh, I think he's going to recognize that. I think he's going to give him a shot. I also think it's going to be a good offense for Rice to be able to make some impactful plays with kind of the Chargers actually more focusing on the run. I think Rice may be able to get involved here and there and just come up with some nice catches that will catch notice in that type of an offense. So I do actually think Brendan Rice may fit in over there in LA. So I went Brendan Rice at 310. And actually it's funny, I'll lead it off to another wide receiver, New England pick. Ethan, you want to talk about Javon Baker?
I like the Javon Baker pick from a New England Patriots perspective. He is kind of one of those sleepers in this NFL draft. He was kind of getting some steam in the dynasty space. So I definitely like the Patriots taking a shot on him in the fourth round at pick 110. Obviously, the Patriots just need to get bodies in there. And Javon Baker has every opportunity to carve out a role. He seems like a character. I don't know if you guys heard some of his comments about how he's gonna basically tell people to get their popcorn ready and some other remarks, but he hopefully he can make people break out their popcorn, because the Patriots are dying for a playmaker. So I think Javon Baker is good as any selection at this point in the draft. Obviously a late third round pick with some upside. So now that brings us to the 312. At the 312, I think you could have went a couple different directions. I ended up going Braylon Allen, running back for the New York Jets. He was drafted in the fourth round with the 134th pick. And I know he's obviously buried behind Breece Hall, but he's only 20 years old, and he's one of these guys I was high on throughout the whole process. He obviously lost a lot of steam as this process went on. And the fourth round, as I keep saying, isn't bad draft capital by any means for a running back, but obviously being behind Breece Hall isn't great. But the Jets drafted Izzy Abanikanda last year. They drafted Braylon Allen, and they also drafted another running back later in this draft. So maybe they're going to want to use a guy like Braylon Allen near the goal line. Who knows what they're going to do? Maybe they'll do a more somewhat like a light committee approach. Who knows? But I went Braylon Allen at this pick because of his age and his profile. There's a couple other running backs like Ray Davis or Audric Estime that I was leaning here, but I ended up going Braylon Allen just because he was one of the guys I liked through the process. And as the commish said, sometimes the third round is just about getting your guy.
It sure is. And that's a wrap here on the draft, folks. I mean, that was a good exercise going through with, again, this was right off the presses. We did this right as the draft, with the NFL draft was ending. So a lot of things will sift out, and maybe even our own opinions will change a little bit here as we get a little more time to sort out where these guys should go. But let's recap this here real quick. At 301, we had Jermaine Burton. 302, Marshawn Lloyd. 303, Jalen Polk. 304 was Blake Corum. 305, Jatavion Sanders. 306, Luke McCaffrey. 307, Spencer Rattler. 308, Bucky Irving. 309, Isaac Garando. 310, Brendan Rice. 311, Javon Baker. And the 312, Mr. Irrelevant in this draft, Braylon Allen. That would have been unthinkable just a couple weeks ago, thinking that Braylon Allen was going to be in 312 range. But that landing spot just really, it really did hurt him. But definitely a worthwhile dart throw there at the very end. But overall, that was a fun exercise to blast through. And we know that your rookie drafts are coming up here shortly. So again, reach out to us here. Either you can do it through the Get Did It app that I mentioned earlier. We're also on X at Sunday_Surefire and on Facebook at Sunday Surefire. And so please feel free to reach out to us. We're here to help you crush your leagues in 2024 and beyond. And until next time, folks, peace.